between the legs.
Connor, don't worry about it. You were up there for like 10 seconds.
10 seconds is an eternity, Harry. It's a third of the way to Mars.
Connor, we've talked about this. 30 Seconds to Mars is the name of a band. It's not a fact.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I'm Ross Bacon. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike McGuigan. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing?
And tonight we are also joined by another returning guest, my lovely wife, Carrie. Say hi.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah. All right. So now this year, this week we're continuing our best of the decade. So we are now 1 year closer to this year, which is 2016 is what we'll be talking about. So we're going to talk about Carrie's pick of The Nice Guys, Mike's pick of Train to Busan, and my pick of Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping. But before we get into all that, we need to discuss what we are drinking. So guest first, Carrie, what you got?
Okay. So I'm drinking Greetings from Maple Shade. Greetings from Maple Shade Lager from Dr. Brewlittle's Beer Company in Maple Shade, New Jersey. So far,
it's not that far, and I don't think we've talked about them yet.
We have.
No, and they're actually like right up the street. You know, they're not far down the road from us. So, but it's pretty good. It's an amber lager, which anybody that's heard me on the show knows I enjoy. And it's okay. It's got a it's nice and smooth. It's not anything like knock your socks off, but I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. It looks a little darker than normal. Maybe that's just the, it's fine. It's just the whatever tablecloth filtering through. All right, Mike, what do you got?
All right. So I got Road Trip from New Jersey Beer Company. It's been a while since I reviewed them. I think I reviewed them on our very second episode. I think it was the second episode I reviewed them.
Something like that.
And I am drinking Road Trip, which is a New England IPA. Now, I picked Road Trip because what is Train to Busan if not a road trip movie?
Right. Yeah. It's just not so much hijinks as murderous rage zombies.
But New England IPAs are one of my favorite kinds. They are less hoppy than usual.
Nice.
It's a very refreshing beer. Nothing too crazy or out of the ordinary. Pretty traditional New England IPA. Not doing anything super special, but still very enjoyable.
Although, as a, not only as a returning guest, but also an avid fan of this show, I have to say I did enjoy your quest to find the greatest pumpkin ale.
Yeah, I think Westville Brewery. Westville Brewery was my pick for 2021. I got to make them a plaque still.
That coveted award. But all right. So I, shockingly, because I did the beer shopping for both of us today, I also have Dr. Brewlittle's. And this time I am doing Chickity Check Yourself Czech Pilsner, which is 5%. And it is pretty much a Pilsner. That's really what it is. It's nothing crazy. Mm-hmm. It's a Pilsner. My favorite part is, though, because Kara's like can labeled. It's like, you know, one of those like tourists, you know, like the welcome to New Jersey, greetings from New Jersey or whatever sign, but it says like greetings from Maple Shade, whatever. So it's got a little more art to it. Mine's just the Dr. Brewlittle's logo, but on the corner over here, it's got the government warning. And then down at the bottom, it says contains 16 fluid ounces. There's also a little note that says contains beer. So in case you hadn't noticed from the Dr. Brewlittle's Beer Company, a doggone good beer, and then beer above the ABV label on here, in case you're wondering, there's a beer in this can. So we know what we're drinking now. Now we're going to get into the wonderful year of 2016, which
I'm looking at the list and it's not as bad as I thought for some reason. There's actually a lot of movies I could pick out that I kind of enjoyed.
Right. I mean, the bad, I think, are worse than they've been. Like, there's a lot of shit going on in this
one. Like the Ghostbusters remake.
Ugh. I mean, there's fucking Hail Caesar, which fans of the Coen brothers will tell you is a good movie, but they're flat out lying. It is not good at all.
You got Suicide Squad, the not good one. Because Suicide Squad was actually pretty awesome.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for superheroes, we got Captain America Civil War. We also got Doctor Strange when it comes to Marvel. We have Deadpool, Batman versus Superman, like Mike said, Suicide Squad, and then X-Men Apocalypse is also this year. But
there's also like other franchises have some solid entries, like Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. I would make the argument is the best movie Disney's made with the Star Wars
saga. I mean, it's fine, but again, it's like anything that's not those original three is still just kind of like
I'd make the pretending. Argument that the space battles in Rogue One are the best the series has done in terms of the movies.
Yeah, but like the personalities like are all just nothing. Like there's nothing. I can't even tell you who the main character of that movie is. I know her character's name is Jane Erso, but I can't remember the actress.
Outside of Alan Tudyk, yeah, there's not that much going on there personality-wise. But Alan Tudyk's pretty awesome in it.
Yeah, I mean, he's Disney's newest Frank Welker. He has to be in it doing a voice of a robot.
And then you have like Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which I think is a fine addition to the Harry Potter universe. The sequel, maybe not so much, but the first one's fine.
No, I mean, I must have like half-assed my research on this because I don't have that listed anywhere.
Also, there's The Killing Joke as this superhero movie.
Right, yeah. So if you don't watch the first like half hour of that, it's really good. But if you do watch the first hour of it, half hour of it, you somehow, for some reason, get to see Batman have sex with Batgirl on a rooftop, which... anyone actually knows who those characters are? It's kind of like your uncle fucking your niece kind of thing. but best picture for this year was the famous fuck up on Faye Dunaway's part when it was she accidentally announced La La Land, but it turns out that Moonlight actually won. Now, of course, the Razzie, which normally picks movies that I've actually heard of or maybe even seen. This time it was Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party, which was all like Republican conservative propaganda. But it's almost like one of those like Kirk Cameron movies where like it's got money that someone put down to make it. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, you want to go, wait, is this actually a movie? You know,
yeah.
or is this just, you know, a talking head putting something on screen?
So I think Don't Breathe is a solid enough thriller.
Solid enough. It got a sequel this year.
Yeah. Split, I enjoyed. I'm a big James McAvoy fan, and I thought he was pretty awesome in it.
Yeah, he's not bad. I mean, then of course there's, you know, Green Room is good. That's a good one. The Shallows is a pretty decent, like, see Blake Lively's ass in a, like, kind of campy shark movie.
I enjoyed The Shallows. The Shallows was it's a good movie. It's intense for, you know, it being an hour and a half of one woman on a rock. Like, they still did it really well.
I think it's my second favorite shark movie not named Jaws.
Okay.
What's the other one, Deep Blue Sea?
I love Deep Blue Sea. It's so Thank ridiculous.
You. There is someone else in the world that loves Deep Blue Sea like I do.
Except it's not for it being a good movie. I love the absurdness of it.
Terrible. But of course, like, I think it was it last year or this year with 15 or 16 that Deep Blue Sea 3 came out?
Huh.
Apparently they made two sequels to that. I didn't even know they made the first sequel.
I'm sorry. Third favorite shark movie, not including Jaws. I forgot Shark Exorcism.
Right. Shark Exorcism, yes. And neither of us have seen Santa Jaws yet, but I'm sure.
No, but I do. I expect that to top the list because Shark Exorcism is actually my second favorite, not Jaws.
I'm also going to throw the unpopular opinion in there that I love The Meg.
Yes, my like, wife is a giant fan of that movie.
Who's not a fan of Jason Statham?
I mean, he's fine.
Love. I like Jason. I like charming British Jason Statham, like Cockney accent Jason Statham, more than I like action hero Jason Statham. Like when he was in movies for being British.
Yeah, like we were watching Snatch last night. We had that.
Snatch is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah, we had a couple people over, and that I just threw that on in the background. But I mean, he's no Black Superman.
Superman.
But he is definitely around in that movie. there was also like if you want to talk about like really stupid horror movies that are kind of dumbly watchable, there's The Boy. That movie's terrible, but it's fun to watch.
Really good anime movie that I came so close to picking is Your Name. Very, very good movie if you are into animated films. There's also Moana.
Call Me By Your Name. Is it like Call Me By Your Name?
No.
Bunch of animated a gay couple. But yeah, Moana and Trolls. Trolls is this year as well. Same with The Accountant in Star Trek Beyond. And apparently, like, The Neon Demon also came out, which is supposed to be really good. It's on, I don't know if anybody's seen recently, the Keanu Reeves released, or somebody on Hidden Esquire review interview. He apparently gave Carrie Ann Moss's son a list of movies that, like, you needed to see, apparently. And that was one of them. The Neon Demon was on one of them. But
you also have Sausage Party this year.
Sausage Party came out. Yeah, well, I mean, like, that movie's fine. And then, like, it just, like, the gimmick starts to kind of wear on you. And it's like, all right, you know, this didn't need to be an hour and a half.
There's Hell or High Water, which I'm actually a pretty big fan of.
That's not bad. It was okay. Yeah, it's kind of like, that's like a weird, like, almost like a Cormac McCarthy, like, No Country for Old Men style movie, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's kind of like just the next level down. Like, if you don't want the A+, you get the B+. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, that's what I would say. Hell or High Water is a B+ like modern western.
Yeah, and then of course we got Ride Along 2, Zoolander 2, My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, Now You See Me 2. Then there's Jack Reacher Never Go Back, Boo Medea Halloween, Bad Santa 2. We also get another Tarzan movie this year with Alexander Skarsgård in The Legend of Tarzan. We have Gods of Egypt, which was Jamie Lannister as a, you know, I think it was a giant god or some shit.
So he was playing Horus in the Egyptian pantheon, the god Horus.
Right.
And you had Gerard Butler as the god of chaos and evil, Seth.
Speaking of that, London Has Fallen comes out this year. And
10 Cloverfield Lane. Pretty 10 solid. Cloverfield Lane. That's probably my favorite of the sequels, quote unquote.
I mean,
if it even is a sequel.
Well, I mean, it's got, like, it's not whatever that one is where it was like Cloverfield in space.
Yeah.
Like, whatever the hell that one was. But, I mean, it's got John Goodman, so it's not terrible.
Independence Day Resurgence.
Ugh. Yeah, talking about movies.
Actually, Ouija Origin of Evil is probably my favorite sequel made that year. Technically a prequel.
It's a prequel.
But it is so much better than the first one. Like, the first one is unwatchable. And Origin of Evil is actually a solid horror movie. Like, I'd say above average to pretty good horror movie.
Yeah, we also have Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, which my wife loves. And Bad Moms, which my wife also loves.
Well, that's the thing. I have two lists for this year. I have good comedies and bad comedies, and because this was a big year for both, and yes, those are both under my good comedies, because that's why I so much wanted to come on for 2016, because it's got so many of my guilty pleasure comedies that I shouldn't like them as much as I do, but I just can't help it.
Underrated from this year, you have Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Right.
Actually underrated. I can enjoy that movie, not ironically.
Yeah, it's like that came because it was, you know, the same era where, like, the same book was coming out, like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, where it's like, let's take something historical and add zombies or vampires to it. So that's how you get Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, because I believe it takes place just to the left of the actual story of Pride and Prejudice, but there's like a zombie outbreak around the story. Yeah.
Also, we have The Bad Batch this year.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. That's a quality one right there.
Also, I have Nocturnal Animals on my list. That movie did not get...
I really didn't do my research right. I didn't see half of these movies on my list.
That didn't get a lot of press when it came out, but it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Good, intense Michael Shannon.
Jake Gyllenhaal. And Amy Adams.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, another great anime movie came out this year, A Silent Voice, the movie.
The movie as opposed to the book?
It has a TV show.
Ah, okay. All right, so that's everything that we won't be talking about. But what we are talking about is, we'll start with my wife's pick of The Nice Guys, which was directed by Shane Black. And Kara, like we've done with the rest, why don't you give us a little intro into why you picked this movie?
So this movie, it's a really fun, like, buddy cop movie, even though they're not cops. But it takes place in the 70s. It's a comedy, but at the same time, it does have that, like, you know, mystery aspect to it where they are, you know, actually solving, you know, solving a crime. There's so many things I enjoy about this movie. I think Ryan Gosling is perfection in it. I think his comedic style is just perfect, especially to play off Russell Crowe. So,
no,
I mean,
no.
and this is also a movie. There's so many scenes I can quote, and it's a movie that I've watched so many times over and laugh every single time.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Yeah, with that whole fight scene between when Russell Crowe shows up to his house and starts beating his ass, and he's like, stop finding, looking for Amelia. He's like, all right, done. I'm done. Put a fork in me. Don't put a fork in me.
No, my favorite. He's like, give me your left arm. No.
My favorite is when he's in the toilet stall, like when he's in the bathroom and Russell Crowe comes in and he's sitting there and he's trying to juggle the gun, the magazine, smoking a cigarette, and he's on the toilet at the same time.
Trying not to show his dick.
Right. And the way the door just keeps slamming shut on him, and that whole scene is priceless.
Yeah, there was a lot of moments in this movie that made me laugh out loud. And you get that with Shane Black. We've talked about Iron Man 3. We've talked about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang has one of my favorite lines in movie history, where he's like, you know what you'd find if you look idiot in the dictionary? What, a picture of me? No, the definition of idiot, which you are.
Just fucking on. Yeah, that's got some great ones. And then, like, with this one, there's so many great little one-liners, and just the way that that Ryan Gosling delivers them. Like, when he says, when he's talking about Amelia's grandmother, who's initially, like, hires him to find her, he's, like, she's got these gigantic glasses on, and he's like, she has actual Coke bottles for glasses. Put a mustache on a Volkswagen, and she'll say, boy, that Omar Sharif sure runs fast.
I also just love the top line on IMDb is, so you're telling me you made a porno where the plot is the point?
Right, exactly.
And when she's like, it's not a porno, and he goes, I have neighbors.
Yeah, hey, I have neighbors. And then, of course, there's the whole, this is Amelia's protest group. Well, why are we here? Because this is her protest group. Stop saying that.
Well, I'd like to stop saying it, but it's her protest group. I hear you saying, I don't think you hear me saying it.
Right. Then there is one throwaway line in this movie that's so good. It's when they bring Amelia home and Janet, right? It's the friend. Janet, the friend, is sitting there with Ryan Gosling's daughter. And he's wondering why they're at his house. And he's like, my sister has a boy over, so she kicked us out. He just goes, your sister's such a slut. He's like walking around. He just walked right by.
Now, the scene that had me laughing more than anything was the elevator ride up. They look out. They see the guy with, like, blood gushing from his neck. They see people getting shot. They just get back in the elevator, press the down button, and you just see a guy get thrown out the window next to them.
I just love
the looks on their faces in that scene. Well, is amazing.
It's the part that Ryan Gosling starts, like, shaking, like, really bad by the time that door shuts.
He's pushing the elevator button.
Well, no, even when they're Hitler in the elevator, he's, like, one ball. Very shaky, like, in that elevator. Like, he's terrified. Yeah.
And then there's also I love the cold coffee scene.
Yeah.
Where he's, like, trying to get, he's like, where's your ankle gun? He's like, who told you I have an ankle gun?
I dreamed that, didn't I? Yeah, I think you did. That's what I've seen this movie so many times. Like, I haven't seen it in a while. I completely forgot that Hannibal Buress was the bee hallucination.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what all those bees are doing now. We're riding around in cars and shit, you know.
I thought it'd be hot coffee.
Yeah. He's like, I like where your head was at, sweetheart. That really could have worked out.
I think then she slips.
That's the other thing I really I love about this movie is the relationship, and even the way he and the daughter play off of each other. It's not just him and Russell Crowe. It's
Betty, whatever, from the new Spider-Man movies.
The daughter is really good. Yeah.
We've been on a streak of picking movies with really good child acting.
Yeah.
Except I will say that, and maybe it's because it was Shane Black, but or maybe it's just because this kid needed to be in every movie in, you know, within the same 2 years is the kid in the very beginning. That's
Ty Simpkins.
Yeah. That puts the shirt over Misty Mountains.
Taylor McCarvey boy.
Yeah. He was in they put him in everything for 2 years. He was in Jurassic World, Iron Man 3, this movie. He was everywhere. And then they put him in Endgame and he was nobody recognized him because he had he went through puberty in between then, you know, even in between the movies.
Yeah, now he's 6 foot tall and not like a little adorable kid anymore. But
he ever really adorable?
I mean, Hollywood thought so.
Right.
But of course, and of course there's Happy Hour Films favorite Keith David is in this movie as one of the other guy, like not these other guys, not the other guys, Miles and Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, but
I think they just called him older man because the other guy is called Blueface.
Yeah, because he gets the dye pack exploding in his face. Yeah,
and I think that's the one thing that I don't like about this movie is maybe it's, you know, because you're meant to not like that character, but I feel like they could have gotten somebody better to play.
Who, Blueface?
Yeah.
Well, that guy was also in a couple things like around that time as well. I think he's one of like the new sort of actors, like everybody every now and then tries to get a break, but just doesn't. But like the one of the best parts about this movie, and it's a tribute to Shane Black because it's the same with all his other movies. The plot is like, it unravels really slowly like a pulp novel, but it's also very, very convoluted. Like when you actually stop to think about this plot, it's like, okay, you start with just a dead porn star and then it turns into a missing girl. And then it turns out that this entire thing involves Detroit and the catalytic converter trying to be suppressed. You know, it's like, wait a minute, how the hell did that start? You know, how did we connect these two things?
Yeah. We went to A to B, okay, but that line to C, that is a long, curvy line you got to get to C.
And of course, we got Kim Basinger in this, who is unfortunately a few years removed from her days as Vicky Vale, where we have I believe an entirely new face on Miss Basinger in this movie. She's aged a bit and not as gracefully as she probably should have.
She had too much work done. It's either too much work or not enough. Right. I can't tell.
And like when she's at the end, when it comes out of like the hearing and Ryan Gosling starts speaking German when she's talking to him, just randomly quitting to her. It's like, I think he's trying to acquit you to Adolf Hitler.
That running gag with him and Adolf Hitler through the movie is
right. Hitler only had a ball.
Right.
He only had one ball.
Yeah.
Munich, a guy with no balls. That's a city in Germany.
Right. And he never actually tells him that it's a eunuch. It's like, all right, city in Germany. We'll move on from here.
I also think that this is the first time you who had product placement since the 70s.
Yeah, it's got a good good amount right there in the beginning. Because he's buying a whole case. But then again, the whole case gets shattered on the floor. So it's not like people are enjoying refreshing Yoo-hoo the rest of the movie.
Yeah. But it turns out Russell Crowe enjoys Yoo-hoo.
Yes. He's no longer drinking until the very end when he's back drinking. But this movie is just, it's too, especially like Russell Crowe, like he's the quote unquote serious one of the two, but he's still pretty funny in it. Like he's got a lot of great lines.
It's got such great wit about it. Like there's so that's what Shane Black is known for, throwing a bunch of wit in movies. And I think this like lands very well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's very good. And of course, you know, like we said before, like it's not a porno, you know, I have Neighbors. Like that whole scene right there where Amelia's like talking and telling everything about the movie, like that whole back and forth is just great. It's such a great little scene.
Though I wish John Boy was more I just never believed John Boy would beat Russell Crowe. There was no point where I believed John Boy was going to beat Russell Crowe.
Right. Wait,
is that the guy with the hockey puck on his face? But yeah, there's some. And then of course there's like the little characters, because every Shane Black movie, and specifically like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, because it's like the closest equivalent to this, aside from, you know, Lethal Weapon, which is the obvious, you know, connection. But in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, one of my favorite characters, and she's only in it for one scene, is Harmony's friend at the party, where she says, "Buzz, buzz, fly, go away." Like that little, that bitch, basically.
Yeah.
But in this movie, it's the kid in the beginning when they go to the burnt down house. The kid rolls up on his bike. He's like, he's like, I was in one of his movies, you know.
No, I tried to be in one of his. I auditioned for one of his movies.
He's like, I got a big dick, you know. So I was like, you want to see my dick?
You know? Nobody wants to see your dick. Nobody wants to
see your dick.
It's funny because one of the other movies we will be talking about has a major plot point involving someone not having a dick.
So good. But yeah, I mean, and then like this whole movie, like if you're going to look at Shane Black, like, you're going to obviously point to Lethal Weapon. And then to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and then the this. You're gonna be like, this is what this guy writes. You know, this is how he can be at the top of his game, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's. I'm kind of out of stuff to say. How about you, hon?
No, there is one more because there's tons of scenes in this movie that I love, but going back to the daughter and how she not only does she play off Ryan Gosling really well, but the way her and Russell Crowe, connect on screen is really good, especially the scene where they're in the bowling alley and she's like, you beat up people for money, can you beat up my friend Janet? Right. And he goes, well, how big is she? Like Russell Crowe's gonna be intimidated by a middle school girl.
You don't know how big Janet is.
And Ryan Gosling's like, okay, this conversation is over. And he's like, we're just talking,
right?
You know,
since you're such a slut.
Yeah, there's I really could talk about this movie forever. That's why I picked it. But yeah, that's about all I have to say on it.
It's so underrated too. Like I don't feel like enough people saw it. Like it's very much flew under the radar too.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
All right. So hon, how's your beer?
Actually I'm glad you asked because I'm enjoying it. At first I was like, okay, it's an amber lager. Like, okay. But, it drinks very, very smoothly and it's light for an amber lager. Like the color of it is dark, but the taste of it is nice and light. So I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I feel like I didn't give it enough credit when I first talked about it.
Does it taste like maple shade?
No, it tastes better than maple.
What does maple shade taste like?
Nothing you'd want to taste.
Yeah. I've lived there.
That raises the question. What town in New Jersey tastes the best?
Ooh.
Cranberry. Cherry Hill. Haddonfield. Right.
No.
Oh, that won't work. No, definitely not the orange. So ironically, it's definitely not the orangest.
Haddonfield probably tastes like bad caviar.
Haddonfield tastes like what Morristown throws away.
I actually lived in Maple Shade for a couple of years. It's a nice town. I liked living there. I had an apartment there when I was in my mid 20s.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Mike, how about you?
I am doing very well. I'm just about done my first beer.
I thought you were just gonna be like, I'm good. I'm doing fine.
I'm doing great, Ross. How are you?
I'm doing great. My beer, on the other hand.
So, Road Trip from New Jersey Beer Company. Again, it's not doing anything super special or unique, but it's just a solid IPA.
Nice. Yeah, my, as I burp off mic, hopefully. Yeah, my chickity check yourself check pilsner from Dr. Berlittle's is very good. It's like I said, it's a pilsner. It's going down like a pilsner. Again, nothing insane, but then again, Czech pilsners are usually fairly innocuous beers. I mean, I'm sure in Czechoslovakia they're pretty great, but the American version of it is just fine. So, on to the zombie road trip movie of them all. Mike, Train to Busan, directed by, I'm probably going to butcher because it's a Korean name, Yeon Sang-ho. It stars the Squid Game slap game guy. And Mike, why don't you give us a little reason for picking it?
Okay, so I've been quoted as saying how much I love Korean cinema, and Train to Busan is no exception. Ironically, it's my second pick involving a dangerous train ride.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really one that could go into the other one had everyone not become a zombie. Yeah.
Now, so Train to Busan, I was trying to decide if it's the best horror movie of the last 5 years, and it's between Train to Busan and Midsommar.
Yeah, I was going to say, you better mention Midsommar.
But two very different vibes from horror movies.
Absolutely.
But just, there's so much about Train to Busan that I absolutely love. Like, Sang-hwa, the character Sang-hwa, the ultimate badass, apparently.
Who's apparently in Eternals as well.
Yes, he plays Gilgamesh in the Eternals. And dude's using zombies to push back other zombies. He stops to grab a police shield and baton and then catches up with the train. Yeah. Ultimate badass. This movie, it's so awesomely shot. The action scenes I can only describe as like kinetic. They show movement really well. And then the emotional moments hit so hard in this movie. It's another one that I just can't say anything bad about.
On that, yeah, when I was watching it, when the zombies start, when they start attacking, the best way I can describe it is when they start to swarm.
Yeah.
Like that. The motion of that is, it's mesmerizing.
Yeah, I like that there's no organization to them. They're just like perpetual motion machines. Like they fall however they fall and then get up however they get up and then they keep moving.
And the visual effects, like the deer reanimating at the start of the movie.
You mean Zombie Bambi? That was Zombie amazing.
Bambi looks so fucking cool the way it gets up. And the first zombie you really see, that actress is actually doing the movements to get up. And she is selling the hell out of it. So like World War Z, take notes. This is how you do zombie swarming.
Yeah. Yeah, as opposed to just what amounts to be nothing but CGI pile. It's all it is in that movie.
Never saw it.
It's terrible.
The action on the train, like I never feel claustrophobic in those action scenes. There's never a moment where I can't tell what's going on. Right. They capture the full train so well. When they use shaky cam, they use it perfectly. And the camera movement is awesome in it. Like you get like, it's a horror movie and it's a zombie movie, but you're getting awesome action sequences.
Yeah, and then there's also, like, because obviously, I mean, we watched it with subtitles, mm-hmm. but in kind of like Squid Games, I'm sure there's some sort of loss in translation there where, you know, whatever the actual Korean is probably a little more descriptive in certain parts. But
do not watch it in the... is there a dubbed version? If so, don't do it.
There is, yeah, but it's one of those like where you gotta rent it or buy it, like one of the two. Well, it's like the only option.
Like you could dub over anime because like there are specific directors meant to interpret how like they can make lines fit the way the character's mouth's working. Dubbing doesn't work for live action. It right. never turns out even remotely okay.
Yeah. But like I'm sure there's some sort of, like I said, there's some sort of like translation, you know, loss in translation there, but because at one point at the end, it's in the beginning, it's just a very like almost like a throwaway thing because you're meant to learn that the main character, like I said, Squid, I'm just going to call him Squid Game Slap Guy. Squid Game Slap Guy he's a busy businessman who has no time to be a good dad, essentially. It's that stock character trope. And you find, and he tells it in the beginning, he tells his assistant or it's one of his coworkers or something to sell off all of their shares. You think it's because it's just a business deal or something. He's trying to bail on a business deal or whatever it is. Well, it turns out, now this is what I gathered, that his company, well, you explicitly told it, his company was involved in the outbreak.
Yeah.
And it's almost as like, the question is, did he know? You know, and that's why he sold the shares. You know, it's like, is that him trying to like cut his losses per se, you know, financially at least.
So my thoughts on that particular aspect, so like it seems like he kind of finds out, so I think he knows something went wrong, but I don't think he knows that thing that went wrong is what led to the zombies.
Yeah, like that, and that's where I was confused, and that's where I thought like the translation must have been like off, because just reading the subtitles, it comes across as him learning. It's a surprise. Oh, our company was involved. But then it's like, what was he doing in the beginning then? Because he was very purposely making a business decision right before shit went to hell, you know? Yeah. So it's like, did he possibly know? But
so you got to, so also if he really knew, you had to imagine he had a better plan.
You hope so.
What he went with.
Yeah, you would absolutely hope so. But then again, his daughter does guilt him into taking that train. So yeah. If anything, he would have just sent his daughter off to become a zombie.
Yeah.
Well, of course, his ex-wife is absolutely a zombie now, so it doesn't even matter in the end.
Wait, no, I thought Busan was supposed to be a safe zone.
Well, they can never get a hold of the mother again.
Yeah.
So that was me. I took that as her becoming a zombie and not being able to answer her phone. Because she's not one of the main characters, which means she turned right away. Because at the end, it's like, of all the zombie cliches, like the zombie movie cliches, that this movie really does subvert, even with 28 Days Later style fast, angry zombies, they don't do the secret bite because someone that you essentially turned right away. But unless you're a main character, then you get to take a little bit slower time. Then you get to reflect on some shit. Then you get to kind of keep your personality depending on who you are until snap.
Outside of main characters, a lot of people, when they get bite, look like they turn very much dead almost immediately after getting bitten.
Yeah,
like not transformed, but literally died and got reanimated.
Right, and it's within like a couple seconds.
Yeah.
But whereas like the head of like the train company, that like the asshole CEO guy, he takes a little bit to turn. He takes a turn. He's like sitting contemplating zombie life in the head of that train at the end there.
But I'll tell you what, in those scenes, like the emotional level of those scenes, it makes it work.
Yeah.
This movie, it's for a horror movie, it's got a lot of layers to it. Like when
I'm hard pressed to just call it a horror movie because I don't think it does it justice.
I think you just call it a zombie movie because that zombies aren't necessarily, I mean, look at Shaun of the Dead. They're not necessarily horror, you know, they're like almost creature movies, really.
Yeah.
Right. But if you say zombie movie, like I'm going to roll my eyes and be like, oh, zombie movie. Like, and that's even like, I almost like didn't even want to watch this at first because I was like, zombie horror movie. Okay. What else is new? Like, and usually the zombie movie genre is not my taste. Like usually I'm not a fan, but this movie I was really a fan of. It was intense.
And if you add the word Korean before a lot of things, it does change things.
It does, yeah.
Like, okay, like let's put it for this. Korean, you know, it's like, okay, a post-apocalyptic train ride at Snowpiercer, but you put
No. Director was Korean.
I know, that's what I said. But if you make it Korean post-apocalyptic snow train ride, it's a lot different. Whereas if you put zombies on trains, oh, that sounds boring. Korean zombies on trains. All right, I'm with you. Then we got, okay, so we got Hunger Games. All right, that's like a young adult. Hold on. Korean Hunger Games. Oh, we got the Squid Games. Huh? All right.
wait. Then you also have Japanese Hunger Games with Battle Royale.
Right. And then like Japanese is like completely different because that's when you can just be like the genre itself. You can be like horror movie. All right. Horror. Japanese horror movie. Oh, something fucked up's going to happen in that one. All right.
That's what more people have to enjoy. I really enjoy Korean and Japanese cinema, but I feel like so many more people have to get on board with this because holy shit, Train to Busan's awesome.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, it's our dumb American brains, you know, it's like we're subjected to, and it's not that I don't enjoy the movies because I do. I mean, aside from Eternals, which I'm not going to see until it's free on Disney Plus. It's, we got the MCU now where nothing's allowed. Nobody's allowed to have sex. Nobody's allowed to curse. Nobody's allowed to bleed. You know, it's, everything's got to be Disney-fied and G-rated for the family in the Midwest. But like, so to get something like Parasite, you know, we're like, oh, it's a class drama. But it, when you watch that movie, it's so much more than just a class struggle. Like it's fucked up at times. And then when you look at something like The Host or Snowpiercer or this, you're like, oh, it's a zombie movie. But hey, it's a Korean zombie movie. So they're not taking the American like sensibilities. They're giving you the Korean version of this. So like,
also,
like growing up in Korea, like if these are my zombies when I'm growing up, I'm like, yeah, this is fucking awesome. I'm hating The Walking Dead if I'm ever watching that.
I love this movie for people getting called out on their shit. People, especially
CL Game Slap Guy.
Yeah, I love that. He's like, hey, asshole, felt good to see your kid thanks to me. Are you grateful or what?
That's my favorite part in the beginning of this movie. When people start to turn and, you know, because we'll call him Gilgamesh, you know, from the Eternals, that guy. Or Korean Arnold Schwarzenegger is what I was looking at him as. Because he's this big, bulky, bodybuilder Korean dude. And so, like, he's got a pregnant wife, that cliche and all that. Well, he saved Squid Game Slap Guy's life with his kid. And the first thing he prioritizes over someone being safe is getting an apology for that guy being an asshole. I was like, right there. That, I like that. Like, and then I was thinking about the personal shit first.
I love it, the immediate response is, hey, why is your ringtone so tacky?
Right, exactly. Like, there is until the very end when it's absolutely earned and it's I'm sorry, all that. But yeah, like just the back and forth. It's like, okay, these are little character moments that are like, this is shit that I'm looking forward to.
And then I love in the middle of the zombie apocalypse, he's like, wait, what's wrong with my ringtone? How do I change it?
Right. He's like, I don't know how to change it. Yeah. But there's also, the funny part is there's the two old women. Now, I will say old in quotes, because the one is clearly a young woman in an old woman wig.
And I called one of them pointless old lady death. It's the only part of the movie where I'm like, that didn't need to happen. It happened because they needed the following thing where other old lady goes, well, fuck all you people.
Well, they also set those people up as having a little bit of a character, so they have to give them a little bit of a drawn out death. But like the one thing that they don't do, which is like American sensibility here, the CEO guy in American zombie movie would be ripped to shreds by zombies fully graphically on camera. In this, he's just kind of swarmed and eaten, and you don't even see it. You know, it's like, well, that's boring. This guy deserved to be ripped apart on camera. You know, fuck that guy.
And then the daughter in this is really good. Like, I think she hits the emotional points awesome. And
more good kid acting, yeah.
And then her delivery of the dad, you only care about yourself. That's why mommy left.
Like, whoa, it's whoa, fuck you, kid. It's like, whoa, that's whoa.
I'm so like,
that's why mommy left. Oh, she also said you have a tiny dick, dad. Whoa, we're in a zombie apocalypse here, motherfucker. What are you doing?
But I'm like, ooh, get him. Because, like, at no point in this movie are you led to. Like, this is a redemption arc for this guy. For Squid Game Slap Guy, this is a redemption arc, kind of. And you're like, yeah, that's probably true. I'm willing to believe that is why mommy left.
Yeah. It's like, wow. It's because it really does. I mean, it's such a, it's a clunky way to deliver that exposition, but it's a great way to do it at the same time because it's a kid that says it. It's the daughter that says it, you know, if it was like his mom or something, I'd be like, all right, that's stupid. But having the kid say it makes it even better. But unfortunately in this movie, like I said, it does suffer a lot of the cliches. The one thing I could have used a little less of, and it's like one of the biggest examples is the old woman. There's a lot of self-sacrifice in this movie.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, one is fine, two is fine at the end, but that old woman's completely unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Doesn't like the baseball boyfriend do it too? You know, it's like, we don't need this, you know?
He just kind of sits next to her as she turns and then he just kind of waits to die. It's not so much he's sacrificing himself to save other people. He's just kind of like, well, all my friends are zombies and my girlfriend's a zombie.
He just
gives up. I'm dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how convenient did that baseball team happen to be on that train?
You know? Also, I love the, like, when she sits next to him, and then, like, they're just, what are they quoting? Accept her.
Yeah.
The baseball team's, like, chanting.
Right. What the hell's happening?
Yeah, see, but you mentioned the cliches, and, like, in a movie like this, when you have a really good, solid movie, you don't mind the cliches. Like, you overlook the cliches. Like, and that's what I did with this. The dad was a stock character but all of it, like, you kind of forget all that, or you kind of glaze over it by the end of the movie because it, you know, the movie's so good that it just works.
Yeah. I mean,
I wish the dad survived because it said that he works at like a hedge fund place. So I wanted him to survive until 2021, when the hedge fund, and I wanted him to be part of the hedge fund that got fucked over with the GameStop stock sale thing.
Yeah. The Reddit stonks thing or whatever. Yeah. Just completely fucks him over. I mean, like, it's fine, because in Squid Games, he's like a perfect character of actor for that character. You know, he's just this random mysterious dude that shows up with this slap game and then hands over the card that gets, you know, a main character to proceed through the game. So he's fine. He's supposed to be like a random businessman. But in this movie, I would almost rather have had what's his name from Parasite and all the other Bong Joon-ho movies. We've talked about it a bunch.
Yeah,
he's the dad in Parasite. He's the guy in the drawer in Snowpiercer. Like, I would rather have him as the father. He's a bit old for the daughter in this movie, but he's such a great actor. He's got a little more presence than this guy on screen.
Kang Ho Song.
That's what, Kang Ho Song. But he's got a little bit more personality as an actor than this guy, because this guy's a very. I'm sure he's a heartthrob in Korea. I mean, yes, he's an attractive dude, but it's kind of like when everybody was putting John Carter of Mars in movies. Taylor Kitsch. When we were putting him in movies, it's like, okay, he's an attractive pretty boy, but he has no personality. He's about as flat a piece of wood as you can get, but he's fun to look at. So that's kind of how I looked at this guy in this movie. But for the role, he was fine.
Is he the guy that was in Magic Mike?
Yeah, but not long, I don't think. He was Gambit in that X-Men Origins movie.
I mean, that just kind of goes to show that
he's got a new movie coming out where he's somebody.
See, that's why you can't just put people in movies because they're, yeah, that guy. Okay. You just can't put people in movies because they're pretty, because that guy clearly is forgettable.
Right.
I mean, not that I have the best memory in the world, I'll be the first to admit.
That guy.
Yeah.
That guy.
That right. guy. But, like, yeah, I mean, he was David Koresh in Waco. I mean, he was also in 21 Bridges as Ray. He's one of the criminals. But, like, he's also got some other show that's coming out. He's in previews for shit. But it's like, really? It's like, I thought that time came and went, you know? But with this guy, with, you know, Squid Game slap guy in this, he's probably fine, but I'm sure in Korea, he's like the Taylor Kitsch of Korea, you know, it's, we got to put him in something, and he just happened to be, you know, cast as the main role in this great Korean zombie movie. Yeah.
Now, again, like, despite him being not one of the more, not like the main character is far from the best character in this movie,
right,
but it still works because the people around him make it work.
Yeah, and that's the thing, it's there are enough personalities around him that it really is great. Like I said, yeah. Like Korean War Arnold Schwarzenegger, like he's like big bodybuilder Gilgamesh guy, he's got a great little personality, and it's like, okay, this guy's cool, I like this guy.
He's the best part of this movie, and he's a total badass, and like, and I love it's him, the main character, and baseball guy running through the train just fucking up zombies, and that was so cool.
Oh yeah, speaking of going through the train, we find out at one point that the zombies are essentially blind without light, and so when they go through tunnels, they don't attack anything. If they can't see you, they don't move. Like when they put paper over the newspapers over the windows of the train cars, they stop attacking the door. And I was like, oh okay, that's an interesting little twist. But then there's no option for our heroes but to crawl on the luggage racks to get around zombies when they're in the tunnels. Now, I was looking at that. And I turned to her. I was like, well, fat Americans are not doing this. It's like Koreans might be the right perfect size people to do that, because you get a couple Americans up there, that thing is fucking breaking.
Now, how would it work if they had like blackout curtains that they just drape over their head? Like, just totally covered by like a black sheet or something.
Right. Like,
would a zombie attack them? I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. Because usually in a zombie movie, it's the fact that the undead can smell the living, you know, and they can like sense that part. But these, they're just, it's effective. Like, it's a sight thing for them, because their eyes cloud over and get milky, but they're effectively blind. And when there's no outside light, you know, it's pretty wild. It's a good little twist. I did like it.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool way to reasonably kind of limit what the zombies could do. Because, like, you give the situation and they don't have that weakness, there's nothing they're going to be able to do about it.
Yeah, and these things are unstoppable killing machines. Like, when they get you, they bite you, and that's it. You know, you're done. So there's got to be a way for our heroes to be able to progress.
They're like the, if you watch Zombieland 2, they're like the T-1000s when they say they're like zombies evolved over the years in Zombieland 2. And you got your homers that are total idiots. You have zombies that can actually like critically think and try to hunt people. And then you have the T-1000s where like you can shoot them and they just get back up every time. You can break all their bones and they just get up and like reattach their bones and come after you again.
Nice. Well, it's like, I mean, the movie itself kind of sucks, but the ideas in it are pretty cool. Army of the Dead on Netflix, that Zack Snyder one, where it's not the zombies in that. There's levels of them. There's like the low level idiots, and then there's ones that it can like critically think and like are basically people, and except they're undead. And they can apparently get people pregnant too. And I was like, well, that's an interesting twist, Zach. I mean, it's fucking insane, but it's a interesting twist, because fundamentally a zombie is undead, you know. It's a reanimated corpse. How sperm still works, I don't know, but
balls never die.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, it's like, well, you didn't kill his testicles, so I guess his sperm still swims.
Hey, Twilight did it first,
right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah that's a whole nother conversation, but but yeah, but it's like there are different ideas like to be had with zombies, as opposed to just The Walking Dead, where it's like, oh, the people are the real monsters. It's like, oh, fuck you. You know, I want to see zombies that are different. Like that, like the quote unquote break sequence of at the end of this movie, when they latch onto the train and then they start latching onto each other and they're just piling up and then eventually slowing down the train. I was like, this is fucking intense. Yeah. It's like, how are we going to get over this? Because there's millions of them. It's like, what are we doing? Like something like that is great, because you can show that they're thinking, but at the same time they're mindless, you know. It's pretty wild.
And then this also has like, you still get like, you get a class type drama in this. Like, you see the homeless guy who's kind of awesome and does a self-sacrifice,
of course, because everybody does.
Well, he gets so that is one thing. So you do get like three major self-sacrifices, but all three get bit and know they're gonna die, and they're like, I'm just gonna buy a little bit more time.
Yeah, it's that. But
but yeah, you have like, so you have the CEO kind of running the train, telling people what to do, and you have a lot of people that are just complacent. You're like, yeah, that guy's homeless, get him out of here.
Yeah, and the CEO guy fucks his whole train car by trying to pull the, oh my God, he's infected, get them out of here. It's like, well, yeah, move them through the game so you can be fucked when they go. Yeah. Guess what you're doing, dude? When they come through, they're going to eat you first. But, all right, so that's about all I guess. Yeah, all right, so, hon, final beer. How's your greeting from the shod?
Still drinking well.
Greetings from Mopple Ashad.
Yes. Yeah, I'm still enjoying it.
Nice. Mike?
I'm still doing good with my New Jersey Beer Co. I'm on about halfway done beer number two.
Yeah, I remember I did them for, I think it was one of the Kevin Smith episodes. I had like the unknowing four-pack sampler pack that I bought from them. Thought it was one beer, turned out to be four different ones. And yeah, like I said, Dr. Brewlittle's for me and my wife. Chickity check yourself, check Pilsner. Really good. Almost done. I got about halfway through my second one. Now on to my pick, which is I think the other criminally underrated movie of 2016, which is Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, directed by Akiva Schaffer and Yorma Taccone, who are two-thirds of the Lonely Island guys, which is also Andy Samberg is the third, who plays, stars as Connor For Real, who is not really Justin Bieber, but is definitely Justin Bieber in this movie.
He's not Justin Bieber.
Right.
Yeah, which he started in a boy group, so he's... he's kind of like if you took Justin Bieber and mixed him with Marky Mark.
Or like Justin Timberlake, you know, if Justin Timberlake were Marky Mark, you know. That's,
the guy in that's the fish costume, it was me.
It was me. But yeah, I mean, it's 2016 was kind of like the peak of the Lonely Island. Like this was like their big, almost like the step after Saturday Night Live. Like it was a great next step for them, because of course they had to make a movie of some kind.
Yeah,
but like it wasn't like I'm on a boat popularity. Like when that song came out, that was the biggest thing that they had had in like my dick and like Dick in a Box, like all that. Jim, this was slightly this was like slightly after that, so they were like, if the arc was coming back down, they were like just barely past the apex of it. But with this movie, it's so great because of all the celebrity cameos, all the various different talking heads that they have, as if this is a real documentary about Connor For Real. When the fact that they got Usher to be such a big part of it, when Usher is the reason Justin Bieber got discovered. it's even funny because the pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping, the Never Stop part was a Justin Bieber documentary. Like it was like Bieber Never Stop or some shit like that. So like the whole thing is essentially saying fuck you to Justin Bieber. And Usher was like, you know what? I'm down for it.
I'm in. Yeah.
I'll do it. I know what I unleashed on society. I'm going to do it too. He's like, I'll be in there. But again, with the Lonely Island guys, there's nothing more memorable.
So it was Justin Bieber Never Say Never.
Never Say Never. That's what it was. Yeah. So it's like for the Lonely Island guys, obviously everybody knows their songs. They make parody songs now.
And you get a couple really good ones in there.
Great ones. So great. I've been singing Mona Lisa in my head for the last 3 days since we watched this movie.
Mona Lisa, what an overrated piece of shit.
How is the whole world obsessed with a garbage fell kid?
I really like Equal Rights.
Right, yeah, not gay.
But I like the Bin Laden one.
Finest Girl,
That's the biggest one from this movie is Bin Laden.
Because that's part of the promotion. That was part of a Saturday Night Live episode. You know, that's how they first released that one. And Vanessa Beyer is the girlfriend in the video. And Fred Armisen plays Bin Laden. Jay Farrow is Obama at the end.
Yeah.
But it's so good. Now, just one of my favorite parts is Mariah Carey being like when they do the humble, like I'm so humble song. And she's like, you know, I'm the most humble person that I know. It's like, all right, did Mariah know that was a joke? Because she's presenting the one of the Poppy Awards with Hunter the Hungry. And she's like, when he calls her, like, he's like, shut up, you old bitch. She goes after him, like, she's going to kick his ass. It's like, okay, I think Mariah knew to be acting there. Yeah. But in the humble part, I don't think she knew that was a joke.
She probably just thought she was being interviewed.
Right, exactly.
One of my absolute favorites. So, okay, we talked about the whole not having a dick part. So, Connor had to tuck dicks in order to do like the wardrobe change thing, and the curtain drops and they're like, where's Connor's dick?
And because they say that only like women can do this particular change. He's like, no, I'm the only first guy that can do it.
And I love the line. Getting
tangled.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the line after like 10 seconds in eternity. It's one third of the distance to Mars. Connor, we talked about this. 30 seconds to Mars is the name of a band, not a fact.
It's not a fact. Right. But yo, where was your dick though? But Hunter the Hungry. So funny. But yeah, and then of course, there's like everything about this. You know, the only thing I hate about this movie, and it's because I just generally don't like the guy, DJ Khaled is in this movie doing his DJ Khaled thing. And it's like, you know what? There was one too many here.
Yeah.
DJ Khaled can fucking die for all I care. He sucks. He doesn't need to be in this fucking movie.
Now, I love Tim Meadows.
Tim Meadows makes the movie, for sure.
As the fourth member of Tony, you know? Yeah. Tony with a question mark.
But one of my favorite parts is Seal gets attacked by wolves. And then what's her name? Ashley leaves Connor.
Wednesday.
Yeah, she leaves him for Seal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you, in that scene, you find, because the whole scene is part of a wedding proposal from Connor to Ashley, and he gets wolves to be there because she loves wolves. Now, Seal is singing this, like, the proposal song, essentially, and Seal singing is causing the wolves to kind of get agitated and lose their minds a little bit. So then the wolves are attacking everybody. Well, you find out that the scars on Seal's face are from fighting wolves. And of course, he's suing Connor too.
Where do you think I got these from?
I think I got these. But I love the idea, and it's got to be a real thing. It has to be. It's like one of those things that I think Andy Samberg, being on Saturday Night Live and meeting so many celebrities, probably heard, because he probably met Mariah Carey, who I guarantee probably has one. The perspective manipulator that he has on his staff, it's just a shorter guy than Connor that he has stand next to him in pictures to make Connor look taller. It's like, there's got to be a celebrity out there that has that.
That was such a good gag. The staff of 23, the different roles that those people play was hysterical.
Right.
Now, I love the scene where he's trying to figure out who will tell them the truth. And like, he feeds them pancakes made with dog shit, and then at the end of the scene you just see the girl eating the pancakes like,
but nothing's wrong.
And then they're just like, huh?
Right. Yeah, look at Connor's face. He's like, what the fuck? Yeah, I mean, it's, oh god, yeah, I mean, one of my favorite parts of this movie is, there's two of my favorite parts. One is just this little quick and you miss a thing. It's Martin Sheen and Connor for real getting in a fight. And it's not like CGI. Martin Sheen is actually there performing in this like 5-second scene. How the fuck did they get Martin Sheen to be involved with this dumbass movie, you know? And then shortly after that, we get the great apology by Connor to Akiva Schaffer, I think it's Akiva Schaffer.
Lawrence.
His apology to Lawrence, and he just keeps this for the catchphrase verse, for winning the Poppy Award allegedly writing a catchphrase verse, and Lawrence really wrote it, and he's just apologizing, and everything is just this new revelation of why he didn't actually write it. It may not have actually been there at all, you know. It's like, because it's a lot of people don't. A lot of people are either like, I love Andy Samberg or I hate him, you know? But when you see this, it's kind of like a perfect example of Andy Samberg comedy, because it starts off normal and the whole thing is supposed to be 100% genuine, but it's just such a silly situation. And he just keeps admitting and having these weird revelations about himself. He's like, you know what? I wasn't there at all. You did everything. I did nothing. You know, it's like, okay. All right. That's
good. It's kind of like the opposite of what happens in the South Park episode with the, what do you like, fish sticks? What are you, a gay fish? And every time Cartman retells the story, he is more involved in writing the joke and does more stuff, and Jimmy does less and less.
Right. Exactly. And then, of course, there's Sarah Silverman, who plays Connor's manager, or his publicist. And at the end, like, because the whole thing involves around the Poppy Awards, which are essentially the Grammys.
Yeah.
And it's so good because Connor's not going to be part of it. They're not going to have him perform. But then you find out that Taylor Swift was arrested for murder. It's like, oh, all right. Kind of want that little scene of what Taylor did.
That's... So now, every time I watch this movie, I'm like, what do I like better? A pop star, never stopping, or Hot Rod? Because that's...
Right. Yeah, I mean, I like this better. I've only seen Hot Rod a couple times. It's like you can take the Lonely Island formula and make it really fucking weird and out there for the songs. Mm-hmm. But when you stretch it into like Hot Rod, with the movie. For some reason, there's a lot of that humor in that movie just doesn't land with me. And so I don't know.
I think Pop Star is the better movie, but I think Hot Rod is funnier. Like, I had more moments in Hot Rod where I was laughing out loud, partially because I absolutely love Ian McShane, Danny McBride, and Bill Hader.
I was going to say, they have Bill Hader essentially playing the same role in this as the roadie who likes to flatline because he got the idea from Flatliners.
Yeah.
So right before every performance, he's killed and then brought back from the afterlife.
Like, it's almost a situation where I think Blazing Saddles is a better movie, but I think Spaceballs makes me laugh more.
I can see that.
See, I think that's what, and I think that's what I love about Andy Samberg in this movie is he kind of takes a step back and he lets everyone else shine. Like he lets all the minor characters like Bill Hader, Tim Meadows, Sarah Silverman, like all the supporting characters, they're the funniest part of the movie, where he just stays funny because he's always funny. I'm in the I love Andy Samberg camp for sure. You know, if you're choosing between love him or hate him, but you know, his comedy is very subtle in this. He doesn't go overboard. You know, like some comedians, like, or some comedy actors, they get a, you know, they have a trademark thing, but they overdo it. Like the one that I'm thinking of most is Adam Devine.
Yeah.
Where he's like, when he starts screaming.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, yeah, that's funny. But
and the first time.
It's always funny the first time.
And then it's just.
Even if it happens a couple times in a movie, it's like, okay, but then if it's like the whole entire movie, you know, enough kind of thing. But
that's why maybe some playing with Mike and Dave in the wedding. It's like, all right, dude, let's find something else to be funny.
They let him off the chain too much in that movie. Though I will say I do love that movie. That's one of my guilty pleasure comedies, going back to what I was talking about before. But yeah, Andy Samberg, he's not trying to be the funniest one in the movie. He takes a step back and lets everybody else around him take the reins and make the jokes. And it works. It totally works for this movie.
Yeah. And then of course, you know, as Owen, you know, you got Yorma Taccone where he's his DJ and he has that giant like robot penis, like Optimus Prime's dick or something. I think it's 100 Hungry calls it, but he's great because he's the only one who's actually part of the Style Boys. He's one of his only friends that he actually has. And it's weird because it's during the comedic shit eating moment of the pancakes where he actually does play it well. He's like, why the fuck would you think I was like these assholes? You know, why would I need to be tested? You know, but like, it's weird because there's occasionally little bits of like actual like acting and it's like, holy shit, these guys can kind of do it too. It's like, this is funny, but it's also like legit.
I think they're kind of going off of real life experience too.
Yeah.
Because they have been friends, you know, they probably have been friends since they were little kids.
Those guys have been friends forever.
So
one of the lines I absolutely love in this movie is when he's like, Connor's music may not be what I listen to in my free time, but it seems to make so many people money.
Right. Yeah. Sarah Silverman. She's got some great, because she's so great at like delivering those like deadpan lines like that. Yeah. Where you're like, oh, wait, that was a joke. That's great. Or when they have went up with Maya Rudolph, when she shows up as Deborah, the spokesperson for Aquaspin, and when I think it's Hunter where he uses the N word with the soft A at the end, and then she says, "What is up, my N word with the hard R?" And you hear somebody go, "Oh wow, went with the hard R. Interesting."
I also love when Nas shows up.
Right. And it's so, like, again, it's these talking heads. You get fucking Nas in your movie to, like, completely act as if in the 90s, you know, one of the biggest, most influential rappers of the actual 90s was influenced by these three Jewish kids, you know? Yeah.
I love the part where he's like, see, I didn't really connect with that song because I had different things in my Jeep than he had in his Jeep.
Right. Like, that was the biggest problem. The fact that the specific things that he listed weren't in his Jeep. It's so good. And of course, there's like Questlove, you know, and of course, A$AP Rocky.
Simon Cowell.
Who?
Simon Cowell.
Oh, yeah, Simon fucking Cowell. You know, it's, yeah, it's.
50 Cent.
and then Michael Bolton.
Yes.
Too, at the end.
Well, he was also on that Jack Sparrow song that they had. He was on that as well. But so he was on like one of the Saturday Night Live songs that they had.
Did you ever actually listen to it? He did an interview talking about it where he's like, I think these guys are so funny. He's like, and they were actually trying to get me in a song for a while and I was for it, but it needed to be something that wouldn't alienate my audiences. He's like, it couldn't be something too, it couldn't have too many curses, too much gross stuff, too. And he's like, they sent me a couple. I'm like, that's even funnier than the last one, but it's worse because I can't. Right. I definitely can't do it. He's like, then they sent him Jack Sparrow. He's like, this I can do. I don't think I'll piss too many of my fans off with this. I can do this one.
Right. Yeah. He's in it. The song he's on in this is Incredible Thoughts, which is just like a lot of like stupid revelations. Like, what if a garbage man was actually smart? It's like, it's like, okay, wow. That's not exactly a revelation, but okay. And just the way that Bolton sings. And of course, that's when we get Timberlake in the fish costume singing, play the guitar. But yeah. And then Usher comes out and does the donkey roll, which is like, all right, you know, 90s hip hop was hilarious and how weird and stupid it could be. But even that, I don't think anybody would have been down for.
I don't know. The 90s brought you the Macarena. So,
yeah, but that wasn't hip hop.
Like, it wasn't hip hop. Was, but different. I mean, like, still, it was the 90s had some, there was some shit in the 90s.
Yeah. But
the 90s were a fucked up time, man.
Yeah. But all right. So, yeah, it's, yeah, Pop Star never stops, never stopping. It's so good. It's such an underrated comedy. It's absolutely hilarious. And the songs are so fucking catchy. Like, Mona Lisa is just YouTube it and watch it. It's so goddamn great. Because also, at the same time, it's like, yeah, what is so great about the Mona Lisa, you know?
I also love when he's looking up reviews on himself. He's like, -4. I'm assuming out of 10. I'm positive 10.
Yeah. Rolling Stone just put the shit emoji.
He's like, I thought that they had messed up, but judging off of what they wrote in the review, I'm not sure they messed up. And then he's like, oh, the onion liked it.
Yeah. he's like, Connor for Conquest is a triumph. It's from some site called The Onion.
He's like, we're gonna call it mixed reviews.
right. So that's probably enough for our picks for 2016.
I've come to the revelation that apparently I like Korean directed movies involving trains and Ross likes mockumentaries.
You're damn right. That's right. Yeah, so far we're 2-2 with that. But next week we will be talking about 2017. And I know, at least in that case, we'll be talking about I'm going to have a creep moment or two in that one for my pick, because my pick involves one of my favorite crushes that I'm definitely leaving my wife for.
Oh, you can go. I'm good.
Wonderful. So yeah. Everyone heard it. I got the pass. I'm gone. But Mike, in the meantime, where can people find us on the internet?
You can find us on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, at Happy Hour Films Podcast. Give us a like, give us a follow, shoot us a message. We love to hear from you. For your streaming pleasure, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, and just about anywhere else you get your podcast from, because of Anchor. It's a great resource with free podcasting. Again, go give us a listen. You're already here listening, so give us another listen.
Keep listening. Never turn us off.
And I believe I'm coming back for the best of the decade. I will be returning once again. I'm excited.
Yeah, you and Tyler are going to round us out at probably at the end with the 2020-2021 episode. But
this time, Tyler and I have to have you and Mike on.
Yes.
Not like the April Fools.
It will be an episode of Happy Hour Television. And yeah. But all right, so next week we'll be doing, like I said, 2017. Guest to be determined. We are working things out, trying to figure shit out. We'll figure it out. Or it just might be Mike and I. Who knows? Who cares?
Yeah, we'll get someone. We'll figure something out.
But all right, so Ken, thank you for coming back on.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll have you back on in a couple weeks.
Okay, just send me those divorce papers when you have them.
I already have them all drawn out.
Cool. Fine.
I just got to print them out. All right, so until
then, you next... assume Samara will say yes.
Damn right. But yeah, next week we won't be talking. Well, no, I think we'll be talking about her, but not officially. I think she does have a movie that year. But because like I said, if I play my cards right, we can talk about her for the rest of the weeks. But
and you probably will.
You're damn right I will. All right. So until then, next week, until about 2017, I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McWagan.
We'll see you guys next time. So long.